welcome to In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And it is too hot to think.
I agree with you. Good morning, Ernie.
Good morning, Tony. You know, I can think back. You and I talked about this before, where we grew up in an era we didn't have air conditioning. You didn't have central air, that's for certain. Usually the open windows and the fans were the closest thing you could get to trying to cool down. And my mom would always say, honey, if you quit complaining about it, it won't feel as bad. And she was right. If you hear people go, oh, it's just so hot. Oh, it's just so hot. It always stays on the front of their mind, but it is hot.
Oh, it's hot.
Yeah.
You know, and gosh, you know, this isn't the first time that we've started experiencing warmer temperatures or 90 degree temperatures. They've been around for a long time, have they not?
They have.
And when I say this, I'm thinking about the old time or the old days when I went to Holmes High School. We didn't have air conditioning. You know, we flew, you know, flung those windows open.
Sure.
And we didn't complain one bit.
Nope.
So suck it up, right? Is that what you're saying? Suck it up.
But what's it doing to our plants?
Well, you know, some of the plants, Ernie, it's not as favorable for some as it is others. And this is why it's important when we talk about annuals and so forth as we, you know, start the spring season and we're trying to scurry and scramble to get our containers together and our window boxes and so forth. There are certain plants that do better than others. But when it gets hot and we get humid, and if you practice poor watering habits, you know, watering on top, we talk about it often.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times, you know, plants don't respond favorably to stuff like this. But it's part of it. It's what we get from Mother Nature. And something I really want to point out, now that you just mentioned the heat and what it's really doing to our plants, one in particular that I know a lot of homeowners can identify with this is our hydrangeas. Mm-hmm. You know, our hydrangeas, although the term hydra means water and all that other good stuff, they have a tendency, for the most part, to kind of wilt throughout the daytime.
Mm-hmm.
Because mm-hmm. it's so warm, it's so hot. And if you take a close inspection or look at your hydrangeas and pull back the mulch from away, you know, away from the base, and you'll notice probably more than likely it's pretty well watered in. Mm-hmm. So don't continue to water it, but you know, just allow it to run its course. And here's the telltale sign when we talk about hydrangea wilt, and this is really primarily more so for the macrophyllus. Those are the real big blooms that we typically see either blue or pink, depending upon our pH level. But if you allow those to go through the overnight hours and you go back outside the first thing next day and you notice that everybody's perked up and looking nice and healthy and feeling good,
mm-hmm.
that is a telltale sign that it's heat stress that's you know, bothering our hydrangeas. So make sure that you inspect and that they're watered well enough before you give them a drink. You know, it's just always check things. If things are wilting or don't look favorable, check the soil first before you water. Just don't water to water, because a lot of times we'll see the same result.
Mm-hmm.
When things, you know, are wilting, it could either be too wet or it could be too dry. So that's important. Good point that you brought there.
Yep.
And something else too, Ernie, this is really, really important. I'm getting a lot of calls from people who have planted a fair amount of new shrubs and maybe some trees and so forth, and perennials as well. And it's one of those things, like all of a sudden it's wilting.
Right.
And I'll ask a series of questions like, hey, you know, where have we been? What have we been doing? Well, I'm watering it every day. Well, we don't need to do that.
doesn't rain every day.
No, yeah. It doesn't rain every day. And I know that we're hot and it's you know, temperatures have been brutal.
Mm-hmm.
But just because of that doesn't necessarily mean that there's not enough moisture there for that shrub or that tree or what have you. Because what happens, I mean, trees will start dropping leaves. So will some of your conifers. You know, they'll drop their needles. And what they're doing, they're going into survival mode. It's like, wow, you know, I got too much moisture. My root system can't breathe. So intuitively, you know, trees and shrubs have this built-in mechanism. They're going to drop foliage right away so they can sustain themselves. Mm-hmm. So that's what we're seeing is the aftermath. So, you know, if we don't get an inch of rain a week, what I want you to do for anything that's been newly planted, especially, take your hose out there and just turn it on low for like 15, 20 minutes. Turn it off and wait till it goes to the dry side. Give it a good deep drink and then wait till it goes to the dry side before you give it the next watering.
Okay. And how do you feel about those, I guess the little mister hoses that you see every once in a while advertised? They have the little pinholes in all of them.
Like the soaker hoses.
Soaker hoses. That was the word I was looking for.
You know, I do like those. And sometimes if, you know, that's the best way or route that you have to water some things, certainly go for it. Again, that's one of those things. When you, those that have the pinholes in them, there's different types of soaker hoses. Those that mist out moisture and those that's just a drip. I'd rather you use the drip because you're not getting the foliage wet.
Right.
And if you're doing it at night, that's even more so important because you're not getting that foliage wet. Excuse me. And as we go throughout the overnight hours, you know, when the foliage is wet for a longer period of time, that sets the stage for diseases.
Sure.
So this, I love soaker hoses. I think they're a great idea, a great addition to the garden. And a lot of time, if you have a series of shrubs that might be running along the foundation of your home, mm-hmm. and this is important too, because when it is dry, you know, that foundation around the house, you don't want it to get too dry where it pulls away.
Right.
We've all had, you know, we've all seen that issue before.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Here's the forecast for today. Temperatures are going to be in the 90s again today. And, of course, with the heat and humidity, a chance of a pop-up shower. And a 40% chance of rain is in effect for today. 89 for tomorrow. The same holds true with the heat, humidity, and a pop-up shower. And then 84 on Monday and 83 on Tuesday. So it's going to be quite warm.
I think, yeah, but I'll take the 80s.
Oh, yeah.
You know? Those were good years, weren't they?
Those will feel great. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Need to pause for a moment when we come back.
Yeah, we're going to stay on the same note talking about some of our newly planted shrubs because it's critical at this point in time in the season that we really need to, you know, pay a lot of attention to them and help them along, and I'll tell you why.
Summer means only one thing, barbecue baby back ribs. Frickers has a summer feature that happens for a limited time. Frickers baby back ribs and boneless frickin' chicken wings together for only $11.99. Frickers, where kids 10 and under eat free. And succulent tender barbecue baby back ribs and boneless frickin' chicken wings for only $11.99. The home for kids eat free every day and ribs and boneless frickin' chicken wings. Frickers.
Miami Valley Gaming, we're always giving away the farm, but now through July 28th, we're bringing the farm to the floor with a Lucky Clucky Challenge. Test your luck and your wits in a game of tic-tac-toe against a real live chicken. You can win a whole squawk free play. So get your tail feathers down here now through July 28th and get ready to get clucky. Which is stop by 75 at exit 29.
See player services for complete rules. Must be 21. Gambling problem in Ohio, call the gambling helpline at 1-800-589-9966.
Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys, and talking a little bit about the heat and the humidity outside, and there's going to be a possibility of a shower, too, but we also want to address a couple of things about our shrubs.
Yeah, we were talking about that a moment ago, that especially newly planted shrubs, and you know, don't let this deter you either as we progress throughout the summer months. And next week's temperatures are looking good. We have a, you know, just a, it's a, weather's conducive enough, but we can still plant. Let's plant. That's what it's all about. Always plant. But what else I want to focus in on, or just, you know, give you a little bit of insight, is regarding our shrubs, you know, and our trees and so forth. Right now, you know, when we do get hot and so forth, what's important is to keep those guys as happy as possible and as healthy as possible. And at times that will involve watering when we need to intervene. And, you know, there's been some times we've had to intervene somewhat, but we've also had some timely rainfalls too, Ernie. I mean, some of the lawns, most of the lawns throughout the tri-state, they're still green. So we've had these timely rainfalls. But what I want us to do is pay attention to our shrubs, because now it's so important that they're happy and they're healthy, because a couple of things are occurring right now. They're setting up bud for next year. and our bloom, you know, our blooming shrubs that give us those colors in the spring, our spring blooming shrubs, you know, they're setting up those bloom buds for next year. So if they're happy and healthy, they're going to have better bloom production for you next year. So, you know, our shrubs are setting themselves up for next season. And that's another thing I want to point out is do not prune anything right now.
So you can't trim them back?
No, I wouldn't. We're right there at the cusp. We're pushing the envelope. You know, you may prune out some stuff for next year when it comes to bloom production and so forth. So keeping those shrubs nice and healthy and happy and our trees. And it's not just newly planted stuff. It's also existing stuff. So, you know, right now, this time of year, Ernie, it's all about maintaining. It's maintenance and just looking after things. And that's what's important.
I just got a text from my wife, Lisa, who's up early this morning listening to the show. And I think this sort of comes into that when we were talking about pruning and trimming. She wants to know when would be a good time to split or to move hostas.
You know, there's a couple of different points throughout the season that you can do that. And
this isn't one of them.
Well, we're not far away. I like to do it late summer, early fall with hostas. And you can also divide hostas early in the spring. Just as soon as you see the new growth coming up, pushing up through the soil.
Right.
And, you know, they almost, you know, they've yet to unfurl the tips. Look like little asparagus tips, actually.
Yeah.
You can divide at that time. Or if you divide late summer going into the fall, the advantage of that is that once you do that division, our hostas can go through a vernalization. They can go through a winter period, which makes them stronger, and they'll be a better plant. Sometimes when you divide in the spring, that works well, and it doesn't harm or hurt them. They just don't, they aren't as robust. You know, they're still trying to get a hold of themselves and get reestablished. Whereas you do it late summer and early fall, you know, they are getting reestablished. Actually, I read something very interesting, Ernie, that you brought that up. It was on one of the Hosta Society websites, and if this is true, this is very interesting, that they put on their best root development and growth during the month of August. So I thought that was very interesting, to say the least. So therefore, that might even be why that dividing them or splitting them late in the summer going into the fall is best.
Okay, good idea.
But either one of those two time frames is pretty much suitable. So how's everything else looking around the homestead?
Oh, just beautiful.
Did you get all those echinaceas in and so forth?
She has the echinaceas in, and she has all the landscaping done on the front of both houses.
Good.
And there's a couple of other plants that were, you know, because we did bring in a bobcat and move some dirt around, some plants around. We have all of the ornamental grasses in place, but I still have to go out and trim what has fallen over. You know, there were some of those grasses that were damaged when we moved them, you know, and I was hoping maybe they would come back to life, but they're not. But trimming them, I guess, is just, might as well just take them off.
So what you've already moved and divided, is it struggling?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. See, that's evidence. You know, that's what we're talking about. And really, those are the trials and tribulations of gardeners. You know, when you do things like that, you know, experiencing it is one thing. Mm-hmm. Telling somebody what might occur or happen is another.
Sure.
And that's a sign of a good gardener. Not that you've lost those. That doesn't mean anything as of yet. But we all lose things. That's a sign of a good gardener. Someone who has lost a plant. They don't. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do.
You know, not every baseball player goes through his or her career or whatever without striking out at some point in time.
Sure.
So that's just the same kind of applies for gardening.
Yeah. Used to play Little League Baseball, and our coach, Mr. Everett, would always say, just keep swinging. The hits will come. You know, like if you can't get any hits if the bat is on your shoulder.
No, not at all. So right.
You got to do that every once in a while. You got to take some risk and maybe do some things you really are uncertain of. But this is one of those things where we had to move them, had to get them back in the ground and hope for the best.
And, you know, that's one of those situations when, you know, we've had people call in before that would echo or say that, hey, I'm moving and can I take these plants? Well, if you're moving and you close and do all that other good stuff, you know, I think it's a little difficult to go back and say, hey, can I dig up some of those plants? Do it before you go. So, and actually, when you, if you're confronted with a situation like that, you know, just stop by one of your local garden centers or nurseries and just ask us for some pots. We have some used pots that all you just need to do is clean them out and go ahead and lift some of the plants up that you want to keep. Make sure you get as much of that root structure as you possibly can, because, you know, doing things like this in the middle of the summer is not always the best time, but nonetheless, it can still be done.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We need to pause for a moment, and when we come back,
we're going to continue it on and talk about the lawns, because there's some things that you might need to know if you feel like you want to fertilize. We got something to tell you.
Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. It's going to be a hot one today, but as we mentioned, just don't dwell on that. Think about that it's not snowing.
I'm glad that it's not doing that. But, you know, we were talking about the heat and how hot it has been and so forth, and we were just touching a little bit on some of our trees and shrubs, especially newly planted, trees and shrubs. But also, you know, we've had some timely rains, and lawns are really still relatively green for the most part, so that's a good sign. A lot of times, you know, we will go through a period of rain or without rain, especially in July, going into August, and it's like things are scorched. But I still do not want you to fertilize this time of year. I'll get that out of my throat in a second.
I can tell my,
I don't know what that is.
I can tell my wife is up early because there's another question that she's asking, and it has to do with that, the lawn thing.
Yeah.
The nutsedge and the creeping Charlie and the ground clover, that sort of thing. Since it is so hot, you have to wait, don't you? I mean, there's nothing you can do.
Yes, you should. Because really, once we break the 85-degree temperature mark, that's pushing it. And a lot of times when you're using selective herbicides, you know, the one that we talk about often, my favorite is Fertilume's Weed Free Zone. It just doesn't really perform at its best. And when the temperatures are warm, you're more apt to do damage to the turf than you are getting rid of what it is that you're spraying.
Sure. Sure.
So we really got to let things kind of settle down, simmer down before we go after some of those broadleaf weeds and other things in the lawn. With the exception of, you know, I know some people are going to start having some issues and battles with nutsedge. We see that common, you know, every year comes our way.
Yeah, we have it. And it's really interesting in there. When you walk up to the front of the house, there's a little strip of grass in between the sidewalk and the driveway. And there's just a little, almost like a half circle of that nutsedge. I can cut the grass in the front, and I am exaggerating a little bit, but by the time I get them over to the back of the yard and make a couple of passes, the nutsedge is poked up about an inch.
Right. I'm going to be honest with you. I've seen nutsedge activity. And what Ernie and I are talking about is that's a lighter colored green type of grass that will outpace the lawn. You'll notice it right after you mow the next day or two. It's up above your turf. And it plays a lot of people. And really, this is the time of year when it really starts, you know, coming on and so forth. And it will progress as we move throughout the summer months. And it's just one of those things you got to really stay with. You got to stay on top of it. This is the first time I've yet to see it, you know, poke or show its ugly face up into my turf.
Right.
It's taken me a while. I've stayed with it. But, you know, you just have to have patience with it, you know, and use the right products at the right time and use the right mixtures. And what's even more important is that when you spray nutsedge is that it's a waxy blade. And if you're not using a surfactant, you know, whatever it is that you're spraying it with, it's just not going to be effective. It's just going to bounce off.
Right.
So you need to use one of two products. And I'm glad you brought that up again because we talked a little bit about that last week. One of two products that are out there on the shelves, and you're going to find these at your local garden centers and nurseries, is High Yields Nutsedge Control. That's a little box, and it's the same as what you might see or find. It's called Sedge Hammer. They're identical. The products, they're one and the same. Sedge Hammer is going to cost you a few more dollars than High Yield's version of it. And as a matter of fact, McGowan makes it, if I'm not mistaken, for Fertilume, so or High Yield. And what you'll do, you'll take that little cellophane packet that's in the box. Do not pull out your pocket knife or get into the drawer and pull out scissors and cut it. the beauty of that little cellophane packet is it will dissolve as soon as you drop it into a gallon of water. Mm-hmm. So you will mix that to exactly 1 gallon. And it's best applied with a tank sprayer. And once you thoroughly mix up that mixture, then what's really best or necessary that you do next is follow up with the surfactant. That's the spreader sticker. That's what allows that product to adhere to, attach itself to the nut's edge blade itself, and makes it more effective. So, you know, if you're going to use Dawn dishwashing detergent, use like 2 teaspoons and just gently agitate it in there. If you mix everything all at once, it's going to foam.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to look like a rabid dog or something. So you don't want that all over the place. Or you can just, you know, I always say this, just buy the spreader sticker. It's only like $4 or $5, relatively inexpensive. And it I know that it works. And we've said this often before in the past, some of our detergents and so forth, and you know, they're always manipulating the formulas to save cost. How much of those surfactants are actually in there that are effective, I don't know. So it would probably best be suited if you picked up a bottle of spreader sticker while you're at the garden center. And, you know, so going after nut's edge, you got to stay with it. And the other product that I want you to look for, too, is anything that has sulfentrazone in it. I find that to work very well also. So either one of those two, you're going to be successful at originally, you know, getting rid of it and eliminating it altogether. And just real quick, I want to say fertilization at this time of year, back off. Don't think about it. I don't want you to do it. Most of the homeowners will not water, even if they did fertilize.
Mm-hmm.
If, in fact, you're going to do something and you feel adamant about it, I would seriously consider using milorganite, which is non-burning. It's goof-proof, you know, as they say. And Melinda Myers, we've interviewed her a couple of different times, and she is the spokesperson for milorganite, and she will even echo this. You know, it's safe to put down in the middle of the summer. Try and water it in if you can. The analysis is like a 620, and it has like about 2% iron in it. So that little bit of iron is going to help green up your lawn. But make sure you water it regardless. You don't have to, but I would like to see you water that. So other than that, stay away from the high, you know, the slow-release nitrogen fertilizers.
Mm-hmm.
Do not use it. So the next best time to fertilize our lawns, according to the calendar in Ohio State University and what we've been preaching for a number of years, Ernie, is in the fall, around the beginning of September and the middle of November. So we still have a little ways yet to go.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Need to pause for a moment when we come back.
You know, we'll stay in the lawn, and we'll cover again what we did last week with a little bit of crabgrass activity that's been going on, and I have some tips and pointers for that as well.
Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And today, it might be a good day to strategize a little bit about being out in your lawn.
Well, throw some sleet on me, because as I look out the window, give me a little weather report, Al, because
boy,
my top's down on my Jeep, and it just doesn't look favorable out there.
No. 40% chance of rain, and if you have the top down on your Jeep, odds are that 40% is going to be right above you. Temperatures expected to hover in the 90s again today and tomorrow, and again, a chance of pop-up showers, and then we'll see 80s on Monday.
So, I welcome the 80s.
Yeah. So when we get next break we get into, I can imagine I'm going to see you trotting across the parking lot, getting ready to move your Jeep undercover.
I'm going to do that. Well, it's not the first time, and the good thing about it is there are drain plugs in the floor.
Yeah.
And it's happened to me here before. It's been a while.
I remember that.
Yeah, I ran out there, and it was just like, what do you do? What do you do? But, you know, before we went into the break, we were talking about our lawns and so forth, and we were just kind of discussing going after nut's edge. You know, crabgrass is another one that I'm seeing quite a bit of in lawns. And it, too, as we, you know, get above 85 degrees, I don't care wherever it is you pick up your product, don't go after it because they shut down. You know, it's, you know, crabgrass, too, like other things, you know, they're not going to take in the product and translocate it inward. It's all about temperature. So I'm going to try and, you know, suggest or coerce you into postponing some of going after some of the broadleaf weeds when it's as hot as it has been. And when it comes time to go after crabgrass in the lawn, if you're going to do it, again, Fertilum Weed Out. This time we're not going to go with weed-free zone. We're going to go with Weed Out with Crabgrass Killer. So that has quinclorac in it, and that is the product that's going to go after and get rid of your crabgrass. Whatever you do, you don't want it to go to seed.
No.
And if your neighbors have a great deal of crabgrass, and once it goes to seed, it gets everywhere. So it's kind of like your call. And the thing of it is that when we talk about crabgrass, the one good thing about it is it will not survive the winter months. However, the seed, it will. And next year, that's why we always talk about Fertilum's First Step, the product, you know, that's in the all seasons bag, the red bag with prodiamine. That's what keeps it from germinating. So it's always a constant battle with crabgrass. It's all about temperature. And when you're going to go after it, use Fertilum's Weed Out with Crabgrass Killer. And it's all about temperature. And it's always a good idea when you're spraying any type of broadleaf weed or crabgrass or whatever it may be, is do not mow your lawn 2 days before or 2 days after. And it's always a good idea to try and hit it after we get a little bit of rainfall, like the other day, because everybody's happy.
Yeah.
Okay. So when everybody's happy in the lawn, you know, they're partying, they're having a good time, they're going to take in the product. So, and what else I like about the crabgrass killer, or any of the Fertilum products, keep this in mind. You know, there's a various way to apply some of these products. If you don't have a lot of activity with crabgrass in the lawn, or maybe it might even be nut sedge or whatever, or clover, you were mentioning clover a moment ago, you know, you can buy these products at your local garden centers and nurseries in one of three ways. You know, we were talking about this last week. You can get it in a concentrate type of format, which will require you to mix it up accordingly to the label, and a tank sprayer. And everybody should have a tank sprayer.
Oh, yeah.
Hands down, you should have a tank sprayer. So that's one way to apply. And always clean out your tank sprayer after the fact. And label that tank sprayer. Write on it with a marker. You know, so you know what's in it. Often, I hear this often, people will come into the garden center and say, you know what? My husband, he was spraying the other day and realized he was spraying Kills All or Roundup on something. He thought it was a weed killer, a selective herbicide, or he thought it was a fungicide and it just killed everything. That happens.
Sure.
It happens more often than you think. So keep that in mind. So you can buy these products in a concentrate type of format. The other way that you can purchase these products on the shelf is hose end attachments. We call those RTS RTS units, ready to spray. Very convenient, and it everything's, you know, pre-calibrated to, you know, siphon out accordingly. You know, so many ounces to every gallon that goes through the hose end sprayer.
Right.
So that's a good way to apply these products as well. And if you just have a couple of items that you want to spritz or spray here or over there, then you have an RTU, which is a ready-to-use, and that is a type of bottle that kind of mimics maybe a 409 or a Windex bottle. So one of those three approaches will work best. It's suitable for someone in some shape, fashion, or form. And when you buy these products, for the most part, when you store them in a cool, dry place. Don't allow those to maybe remain out in the shed or wherever throughout the winter months, because if these products freeze, all the components and everything kind of start to separate.
Yeah.
It's not as effective anymore. So and you'll get about a 3 to 5 year shelf life out of these products. So it's they're worth investing in, is all I want to tell you. And when we're going after things in the landscape or around the house, you know, even if it's insects, you know, that's another thing that's been plaguing people too. You get these rains and all of a sudden you get a little scurry of insect activity. And maybe we can talk about that when we come out of the break, you know, Ernie, some things that you can do to keep insects at bay around the home. And we'll talk about that when we come back.
In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We need to pause for a moment. We'll be right back.
Welcome back.
Tony was running like a refugee down to his Jeep, and then got it moved and then got back up here. You okay? You need a break? You need to catch your breath?
I'm okay.
What was all that cricking and snapping and popping?
You know, there were joints. I need a little WD-40.
You look like the Tin Man.
It was like, oh, gosh. Yeah. Oil me up.
That was fun to watch.
Well, I think it won't be the last time, I'm sure.
No.
And in my luck, I'll probably get caught. You know, in the rain. Speaking of luck.
Yes.
We were talking last week with our good friends from Arling House, Heating and Air.
This is
Ryan precious. Was in.
This is precious.
And Ernie and I were talking about this a little bit ago. I was bragging about my dad's, you know, air conditioning unit. Actually, that was installed when I was a junior in high school.
That long ago?
1980.
Ooh.
So, and my dad and I were talking about this the other day, and I was like, listen, don't even talk about it. Don't even bring it up. You've had it for a long time. It's exceeded its lifespan twice, okay?
Yep.
And I'm like, you better knock on wood.
Don't jinx yourself.
So someone the other day told him to go home. The best thing he can do is just take his garden hose to it and kind of hose off the condensers, the coils, or whatever. And guess what?
The shady tree technician bit him.
Yes. Big time. Oh, he was hot yesterday. I could tell when I went into work. I can almost, just by his demeanor, his facial expressions, you know, uh-huh. just how he talks,
yep.
that something was up. And I'm like, you know, what's gnawing on you? Don't ask. Don't ask. Man. How ironic or coincidental that was.
Yeah,
you know.
And the hottest days of the summers to date.
That's what Ryan said. They usually go out when it's hot.
Yeah, that's right.
I've never heard of anyone's air conditioning going out in December or January. Right. If you, it's usually when it's hot.
Well, I hope they get a chance to get over there and hook him up and help him out.
I know. I don't say anything else to him about it.
No. No. Learn to dance around that fire.
Big time.
But we do feel for all of those men and women that are working out in this weather over the last week or so. I noticed the construction guys are trying to keep hydrated, as well as our fire, our EMS, and our police departments. So do keep that in mind. They're out there working. They're out there performing under unimaginable stress just because of the weather.
Yeah. And you know something else that I find very surprising while we're talking about the heat and so forth? The number of people that still leave kids and pets in the car. That one still, it just gets me. And it seems like in the recent weeks we've heard on the news where, you know, infants have passed in you know, away because their parents, one of their parents have left them in a car and it gets so hot. It's crazy. But anyway, on that same note, don't do that. And also look after your pets. And usually we haven't heard from our good friend Denny the Birdman, but also our birds and so forth too. You know, make sure that there's adequate water out there in the bird baths and so forth, especially if you don't live anywhere near a pond or a type of stream of any sort. So taking care of our feathered friends, making sure there's clean, fresh water in the bird baths. Also the hummers, make sure that you're changing out the sugar water every couple of days. You know, the hotter, you know, as hot as it's been, it goes probably, I'm sure it goes rancid quicker. So make sure that you're changing that all out and so forth. And I know you practice those habits pretty well, don't you?
Yeah, we need to clean out our hummingbird feeder because it usually gets full of bees that try to get in there and they wind up perishing. Tony, we have Ray on the line from Delhi who's got a crabgrass question for you. Hi, Ray. Thanks for hanging on.
Good morning.
I'm going
to talk to you, gentlemen.
Do you have us on speakerphone?
No, I do not.
Okay. Are you in your car or something? It's difficult to hear you.
Yeah, I'm in my car. I'm sorry.
Okay. No, you're all right. If you can roll the window up, that'd be great.
What's going on?
Yeah. Well, I rent my apartment. They're side-by-side apartments. I don't want to give the name of the rental company or anything like that.
Uh-huh.
But the gentleman who does the landscaping, he just throws mulch down and never maintains anything. And there is just so much crabgrass. And to get out there and try to pull it would take, obviously, a lot of time.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to spend a lot of money, but I feel like it looks horrible.
Right.
And I don't know how to try to make it look a little bit better because I was brought up, you know, presentation is everything. Your house, your clothes, your hair, everything.
It says a lot about you in a lot of ways. And I've mentioned that before in the past here on the radio, and I've gotten some flack from it. You know, people are like, well, you know, not everybody has the time to do this. But I agree with you. And right now at this point in time, you know, the temperatures really have not been conducive enough, in my opinion, to go after crabgrass or some other broadleaf weeds because it's just too hot.
Right.
And so therefore, what I would do is you're over in Delhi, right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, stop over there at Robbins Florist and Garden Center.
Yep, I know exactly where it's at.
And they're over on Pedretti. And ask for Ron or Eric. And pick up a bottle of Weed Out with crabgrass killer.
Uh-huh.
And when the temperatures get to where they need to be, go ahead and spray. But what you can do as well, wait till we get a little bit later into the summer. Uh-huh. And if you want to get rid of a lot of weeds, go ahead and do that. And be ready to turn the corner and sow grass seed at the beginning of September.
Okay, well, I was going to do grass seed at my mom's house, like I said, I rent, and I have, you know, rosemary, thyme, you know, fresh herbs and some tomato plants, which I keep on my porch steps.
Awesome.
Like, I keep them in planters, but yeah, it's just the crabgrass that, you know, where they're supposed to be, like, ornamental bushes, but it looks horrible.
right.
You know, they spent this money on the mulch, and then just crabgrass come through, and I'm like, if it's not maintained, it's going to look disgusting, you know.
Right.
It's going to look trashy.
Is most of the crabgrass, is it in some of the mulched beds and the lawn, or both? I mean...
It's mostly in the bed, and
okay.
That's what looks horrible.
Well, in that case, I was assuming most of it was in the lawn, but what else you can do is... pick up a bottle of Kilzol or Roundup, and you can spray it. As long as you don't get any overspray on your desirables or any shrubs or anything that's in the landscape beds.
Right.
But, again, temperature comes into play, you know, but just keep that in mind. But that would be the approach that I would take. Okay?
Okay. I really appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome.
Thank you so much. You have a great weekend.
You do the same. Thanks.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And that can be difficult if you're a renter and the outside of your place is supposed to be taken care of by the person you're renting from or a company, and it's just unsatisfactory.
Yeah, unfortunately, there's a lot of that goes on out there. And it's nice that somebody, did you say her name was Ray?
Yes.
Like Ray, that, you know, they, even though they may rent, they do care about the property and where they live and want to take care of it. And that's awesome. I think a lot of people, you know, they enjoy having a nice looking home or front lawn or landscape bed. You know, it's all about curb appeal.
Sure.
It really
sure.
is. And she said it, you know, just as well as I've said it before in the past, you know, I think it says a lot about you, you know. And I don't mean that in a bad way.
No.
I've caught flack before over that. I really have. And it's like, hey, Tony, not everybody can do this.
Right.
I understand. But, you know, we're just somewhat trying to encourage you and entice you to act and take those measures, you know. But
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Several ways to stay connected with us. Jump onto our Facebook page. Give us a like. We'll like you right back. Have a lot of great things that we share with our friends there. And you can email us at inandaroundthehouse@b105.com. We need to pause for a moment when we come back.
We're still going to go after those creepy crawlers that might be trying to get into our house from the outside, especially when it rains. You kind of notice that sometimes. You get a little heavy rain, and all of a sudden, a little scurry of activity. But we'll talk about it.
Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And not only are we trying to escape the heat and the humidity, all of the other little creatures and critters are also. So you may notice some stuff trying to get into the house.
I did the other day. I did the other day a little ant activity, and I'm like, it might be time for me to go outside and do a little spraying. So, you know, if you're played with some of that kind of stuff, it could be anything from ants to spiders to crickets, you name it. You know, try using Turf Ranger Insect Control.
Mm-hmm.
That's a high-yield product. It's a granular product, and it's easily spread, you know, around the foundation of the house outside. You can just spread it on the mulch, underneath some of your shrubs and trees and so forth. That does a wonderful job keeping insects at bay. And again, you can find that at your local garden centers and nurseries here throughout the tri-state area. That's a high-yield product called Turf Ranger Insect Control. Does a great job, Ernie. As a matter of fact, it's great for ants, chinch bugs, crickets, like I said, fleas. You know, a lot of people, you know, if you notice that your pets are having some flea issues, you know, these might be some products that you might want to put outside around the house.
I don't think I've ever heard of a chinch bug.
Chinch bugs, yeah, they're what in the that? Lawn. They're lawn. They're in the lawn. They'll feed on turf and stuff. So, yeah, it just there's a number of insects that this works effectively against, or you know, keeping you know, getting them out of the way and getting rid of them. So I like this product. I use it myself. Mm-hmm. So when I see a little bit of activity occasionally, I'm the one that kind of goes to guns.
Right.
You know, I'm still old school somewhat. But, you know, I don't have pets. We don't have kids. So I'll use some of these products, you know, and they work very, very well. Another one that I think highly of, and if you've yet to use it or not used it, and you're really having some serious insect issues, is another high-yield product called 38 Plus. And that 38 is the amount of permethrin that's in the concentrated product itself. And it works extremely well. However, you cannot use that inside. But nonetheless, you can go all around the outside of your house, the perimeter, the foundation, the windows, the doors, your garage, and so forth. Mm-hmm. And believe me, when insects crawl over that barrier or where it is that you sprayed, they're shortly on the other side. They're done.
And it's over.
It's over. Now, and it's great for spiders, too, if you ever have spider issues.
You know, great. We're here toward the end of July already, believe it or not. And one of the things we're always talking about is how some of our nuisance weeds really don't germinate or go to seed until later in the fall. Is this the time we should start up trying to approach that to stop some of that stuff so that we don't see it in the spring next year?
You can, and we're fast approaching that period. Actually, you're spot on. So what you're talking about is like going after something from a pre-emergent standpoint in the lawn or in the landscape beds. And we've kind of covered this a little bit, especially in the landscape beds. We're talking about high yields, turf and ornamental weed and grass stopper that contains Dimension. That is a wonderful, wonderful product. And, I like it. It's a lot like Preen. Preen works as well. You know, I don't have anything against Preen, but I have to give the slight edge to High Yields Turf and Ornamental Weed and Grass Stopper with Dimension. It's a couple of things. It will last a month longer, gives you 4 months, you know, worth of protection. It's cheaper on the pocketbook.
Yeah,
and the
yeah.
thing of it is that High Yield products, they're great products. They are a part of the Fertilim company. They just don't advertise. They're not spending all their money on advertising dollars. You know, they're great products. They do what they're supposed to do. You're going to find them at your independent garden centers and nurseries. Nothing fancy about them. They just get right down to the nuts and bolts of it and get it done. They work extremely well. These products are awesome that we talk about. And if you need to do any spraying indoors, you know, when we're talking about the insects too, I'm going to come back to that, you know, that pre-emergent situation. But for indoors, you know, you can use Killabug 2, and that's a great product. You can also find that in RTU, so that's safe to use indoors if you have pets and children. So you have an option inside. We talked about those outside. And rest assured, you won't, if you take some of those measures, you're not going to have to contact an exterminator or a bug company to take care of your bug issues.
Right.
The only time I want you to do that is if you think by chance, if you have termites, that's a whole nother topic.
Boy, so, it is. Yeah.
You know, if you think you might have termite activity, call a professional. Don't try and, don't try and deal with that and take that into your own hands and try and fix. Call a professional. That's for sure.
There is no second guessing when it comes to those.
No, there's some serious things can come about as a result of termite activity. Have you ever had termites?
Yes, we have. Yep. We had some down at the bottom of a door that we had to take care of. It was a door that went out to the back part of the house, and they had gotten, this was before we replaced the exterior doors with metal door frames, and that's where they were trying to get into. And they'd probably gotten most of the bottom of that door frame,
mm-hmm.
so we had to have them, had to have an exterminator come in, take care of that, remove all the rotted wood and the wood frames and put steel frame doors back in there.
Yeah, so, you know, they're subterranean, you know, they're going outside or going down deep, they're getting moisture and they're coming back and eating on wood. And, you know, unless you have a trained eye or you really know what to look for and you know, just inspecting the basement around the foundation, things like that unchecked for a number of years. I mean, everybody should have their home inspected occasionally.
Sure.
And, but they can wreak a lot of havoc on you.
Mm.
That's for sure. I know that, what was the one commercial? I always enjoyed it. He was a delivery guy, termite.
Oh, yeah.
He's like,
yeah.
Hey, is that oak you got there? You mind if I come in?
Yeah. Great stuff.
It is.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We need to pause for a moment when we come back.
Sooner or later, every gardener is likely to get them. And we're going to talk about these pesky fellas because they're running rampant and what you need to know and what you can do to get rid of them. 749-B105. Ernie and Tony, your local home and gardening guys. We'll be right back.
Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And this will be a great day to get to your locally owned, independently operated garden center because it's going to be hazy, hot, humid, and ugly outside. May even see some showers. But we're talking about a couple of things. And Tony pointed out that I think just about everybody gets affected by these spider mites.
Oh, yeah. Sooner or later, every gardener will. And they are the most feared and loathed enemies in the landscape. And that's the spider mite.
The feared and most loathed.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. The spider mite. I'll say this. If you've not come across this particular feisty little pesky garden pest,
uh-huh.
You better make sure that you can do everything in your power to keep them away.
Yeah, I have a...
they can wreak havoc quickly.
I had an old friend of mine that had an Alberta spruce that just was affected by that and always struggled.
Oh, yeah. That to a spider mite,
yeah.
The Alberta spruce is like a ribeye.
Oh, is that right?
It's like a ribeye steak. Mm. They love them. Mm. They love them, Ernie. They'll chew those up like nobody's business. They love them.
As someone walked around with the order tray, right?
Oh, you know, this is no, you know, I know we're joking around a little bit. We make light of some of these subject matters. But once you've been infiltrated by spider mites, you will take heed to what I have to tell you. I mean, you're going to take treating things, with whatever it is you need to treat them with more seriously. There's right. No doubt about it. And I told you sometimes I like to go to guns, mm-hmm. but, you know, I'm not here to, I'm not Mr. Chemical by any means, but, you know, spider mites, it does not take them long to set up shop and all of a sudden, wow, lights out.
Right.
And they love, you know, it's really interesting. Spider mites, they affect a lot of different plants. But when it comes to like some of our evergreens and so forth, I mean, let's just take the arborvitae by, for example. Let's take the Alberta spruce, maybe a blue spruce, you know, some of those really nice looking blue spruce globosas, or it might be a blue spruce tree. You know, these species, they're affected by spider mite. And here's what typically happens. We get into the hot part of the summer months, you know, spider mites, they're seeking out moisture, you know, not rainwater type moisture, just right. Moisture from plants, places where they can hide and be protected. And that's why a lot of times, you were talking about the Alberta spruce. Let's take that particular picea, that shrub, for example. When they're up close to the house, you don't see this activity because the front side of your Alberta spruce or your mm-hmm. arborvitae, they're exposed. You know, a lot of times, you know, you get a little bit of weather or rain. They don't like that. They don't like to be wet. They're on the backside, in between the backside of your shrub, your Alberta spruce, and the house. That's where they hang out. And think about this. When it's dry, what's different about, you know, evergreens for the most part versus other types of deciduous trees and shrubs is that they have the canny ability to hold on moisture a little longer. So what they do, they'll just pierce, you know, those evergreens, the needles, and they'll pierce that with their mouths and just start sucking the fluid out of them. They'll damage the cells. They start, you know, sucking the water out of them, and then all of a sudden, things don't look rosy. And it doesn't take long for a spider mite infestation to wreak havoc on a plant. And then all of a sudden, it's like, whoa.
And so the damage is done.
The damage is done. Yeah, the damage is done. And like I said, sooner or later, every gardener at some point in time is going to have a run-in with these guys. But there's been a lot of spider mite activity out there. So there's a couple of things that you can do to keep spider mites away. One of those things that you can do is periodically take your hose, you know, and if you have one of those nice hose nozzles on there where you can just spray out a nice gentle stream, spray your evergreens periodically. You know, do it in the morning, in the daytime hours when they can dry off.
Is this a spray you put at the bottom of it?
Everywhere? Just take your garden hose and just spray up and down your arborvitae or your Alberta spruce or your blue spruce globosus, whatever. And that will knock spider mites off. That jets them off. They don't like to be wet. But do that occasionally. Mm-hmm. You know, that's one of the easiest things that you can do, one of the safest things that you can do. Now, and spider mite, they're so hard to detect. They go undetected. You can't even see them with the naked eye.
Right.
You know, you'll see some fine webbing. And typically by the time you find something going on with your tree or shrub or whatever it is that they're, you know, feasting on, it's after the fact, it's late. You know, it's like finding cancer in a stage 4 sometimes or stage 3 scenario. But, you know, pay attention. When you mow your lawn weekly, pay attention. Look at your trees. Look at your shrubs. And check out your perennials. Look at your vegetable garden. Notice your tomato plants. Pay attention because, you know, it's that quick that these things can happen and occur.
Yeah, just a little inspection on all these can save you an awful lot of trouble.
Big time. It can save you a great deal of trouble. And, you know, like I said, sometimes, you know, I like to go to guns. And unfortunately, you know, we often talk about Fertilume's tree and shrub systemic drench with the imidacloprid. Unfortunately, that product does not work on spider mite. I wish that it did. That would be a great fix. But unfortunately, that's not the situation. So therefore, you know, just because I've seen the damage that spider mites can do on, you know, plant species, I like using malathion. You know, High Yield makes a malathion product out there for you to pick up at your local garden center and nursery. Malathion, every gardener should have malathion in his or her arsenal, period. That's one of those products that works extremely well against almost most insects.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to keep that on deck. Believe me, losing an expensive conifer or a beautiful blue spruce tree isn't worth it. I mean, think about what those cost. That's a lot of money out of your pocket.
Sure.
Versus $15 for a quart or a pint of malathion.
Yeah, it's expensive. You got to get it cut down, then you have to get it taken out, then you got to get the trunk removed or the stump removed, and then get another plant to put in there, another tree.
Right. You know, and it's right now, this time of year, it's really about maintaining what we have already done this spring in the garden. Or, you know, even with our containers, or even with our window boxes, our landscape beds. You know, it's all about maintenance at this time of year. And, you know, we were saying earlier in the program, too, you know, I want you to pay attention to those newly planted trees and shrubs, especially. And if you have areas where you did plant a new tree, you know, keep an eye on it. If you can't get a hose out to it, we're not getting enough rain, invest in one of those water bags, the gator bags.
Yep.
You can fill those up, put it around that tree trunk, and it will slowly disperse water. It keeps them happy. It keeps them healthy. You know, most of our trees, especially our blooming ornamental trees that gives us color in the spring, even our shrubs, you know, let's talk about forsythias. Let's talk about our lilacs and so forth. They're setting bud right now for next year's spring blooming show. And it's crucial, it's critical that we keep them healthy and happy. And, you know, that might be watering. And then also, as we progress throughout the summer months and hit the fall months, that time of the year, we'll talk more about fertilizing late in the season. You do that when, you know, most of our deciduous shrubs have dropped their foliage. So that's the point in time to do that. Don't fertilize them now. Right. Wait till a little bit later. But we need to keep everything looking good.
749 B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Need to pause for a moment, and when we come back,
we're going to talk about our plant of the week. And this is it's stunning. And check out our Facebook page, because we're going to talk more about it when we come back. 749 B105, Tony and Ernie, your local home and gardening guys. We'll be right back.
Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And we have been talking about a lot of different things affected by the heat, the humidity, and now we're going to talk about a plant of the week.
Not these guys.
No, they
love
them?
These are heat busters, brother. Ah. And actually, deer don't even bother them either for the most part, but I love the coleus. And the coleus is our plant of the week. And I kind of just, I'm thinking to myself, is that a good plant to choose for the week to really highlight on or hone in on? And as I was looking at around the garden center the other day at these whiskey barrels that we planted up, I couldn't help myself from admiring the coleus that is in some of these whiskey barrels. And one in particular is called Trusty Rusty. How do you like that name? Trusty Rusty.
That's one to remember.
And definitely one to remember. And if you go out on our Facebook page, I posted one of the photographs of one of the whiskey barrels. And everything in this whiskey barrel is stellar. Nothing special done here. We've started the whole foundation using a good soil mix. We talk about that all the time.
Right.
So, coleus, using a good type of soil mix that's geared for containers. But nonetheless, I'll still really perform well for you, just even in the ground itself and various landscape beds. I even touch base on the coleus beds out there at the Crestview Town Center.
Right.
How nice looking that was. As a matter of fact, somebody had sent us a photograph of that in. That day we were talking about it. A little blurry, so I didn't put it on a Facebook page. If I can get a clearer picture of it, that would be great. But the coleus, nonetheless, man, they can take whatever you throw their way. And if you look in here, Ernie, one of your favorite plants is in the center of this whiskey barrel. That is the canna.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that beautiful?
It does.
Boy, if you're... get on your computer right now and take a look at the Facebook page, because these are stellar containers. And these are what your containers can look like. Everything that we talk about on this program, and we talk about supporting your local garden centers and nurseries and the plants that will perform their best for you, or the soils that you need to be successful, and the fertilizers, this is the testimonial. This is what we talk about all the time at all of the garden centers throughout the tri-state area.
Mm-hmm.
This is what we want you to end up with. It's easy. Nothing special that you have to do is just follow a couple simple rules.
Sure. And do you have sweet potato vine in
it's
there?
It's all going on in there. So it is in there. And that sweet potato vine is one called Marguerite. That's the one that gets a little crazy.
Mm-hmm.
So, I like to keep them trimmed back a little bit so they don't look wild, like as long as your hair is going all over the place.
Yeah.
But in this particular, in this whiskey barrel, I can't keep from looking at this combination. The cannas, we talk about this all the time. They are the thriller in this particular container.
Yeah.
And one of the supporting candidates or actors in this particular container is what we call a filler, and that's Trusty Rusty. That's the coleus. And the beauty of coleus is we don't buy coleus for the bloom. It's the foliage. Coleus are available in an array of colors, a variety of colors, textures. They grow to various heights and so forth, and they get different widths. So always be sure to read the tag on the coleus when you're looking at coleus. And honestly, we used to always say and preach that coleus were shade plants. They can take the shade, but I'll tell you, they'll give you a burst of color, too, if you got some sun. So they can take either or, sun or shade.
That's a beautiful setup there. How many plants would you say are in
there? I don't. There's a couple. There's a few, but really, when you allow a plant to do what it's supposed to, it's going to fill up those voids.
Sure.
So in this particular arrangement, Trusty Rusty's our filler. So our thriller's the canna. Trusty Rusty is our filler. We talk about those components when you put together, some of our combination planters. And doing all the spilling, okay, are just really three items. One of those three is the pink petunia that you cannot go wrong with bubble gum.
Right.
Petunia Vista bubble gum. That petunia will rock your world. Look at it.
Mm-hmm.
There it is. Also, another plant that I think that deserves more merit, and we're still going to be talking more about coleus. I'm just getting excited about this container. But another plant that really deserves a lot more merit and notoriety than what it truly gets, and it can take the heat, and it's incredible the way that it performs, is Scovola. That is the blue that's in the center of that pot.
The Scovola?
Scovola.
Okay.
It's an annual. Mm-hmm. Loves the sun, loves the heat. And again, you know, going back, the other spiller there is the sweet potato vine, Marguerite. So this combination, just the colors in this are stunning.
Mm-hmm.
And coleus can make and take such an important role in combination planters or with other plants because of the colors, the various colors of the foliage. They're wonderful in containers. They're wonderful in mass plantings. They can be used in borders. I can just go on and on and on about mm-hmm. coleus. And the bloom time for coleus, they will get a bloom. And it's not anything that we're buying the coleus to wait on this spectacular bloom period or blooming show. You know, typically the blooms that coleus get are blue in color. They're spiky. But most of our coleus, you know, they are bred not to really bloom or bloom hardly at all. So the hybridization, the breeding of coleus has gone, you know, come a long way because we don't want them to go to bloom. You know, we just want that foliage show.
Right,
when plants
right.
go to bloom, what they're saying is, hey, my life cycle is nearing its end and we want to bloom and we want to set seed. Okay.
Right.
That's typically the whole life cycle process of annuals. But you cannot go wrong with coleus. That's Trusty Rusty, one of my favorites. And Trusty Rusty, you can pretty much expect it to get about 18 to 36 inches in height. And a lot of that height variance depends upon how much shade or how much sun that they're getting. The copper leaves on Trusty Rusty are outlined with that golden yellow.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see that, too, on the Facebook page. Large leaf, and it's a vigorous grower. It gives you nothing but performance.
Beautiful.
I love it. Another favorite, I'm just going to talk a little bit about a couple of my favorite
sure.
coleus. And all right, women, you got to like this one because most women like wine. Us guys, we gravitate towards beer for the most part. One's called Dipped in Wine.
Dipped in Wine.
Dipped in Wine.
I like it.
It's another beautiful coleus, a very popular coleus. And it'll get around 20 to 36 inches in height, about a 2-foot spread. And the leaves on this particular coleus, the Dipped in Wine, is a beautiful, rich crimson color, okay? And it's got this nice tinge of a green, like a chartreuse green edge around the outer edge of it. And the veining element about the leaf is pretty distinctive, and it's somewhat highlighted by the magenta color of the veins that's there on the leaf itself. So Dipped in Wine is going to be one of those coleus. You know, I don't know what its availability looks like right now, and I'm sure most of you have already done up all of your containers and most of your plantings. But nonetheless, these are stellar in the landscape, and these are ones you want to look for next season
mm-hmm.
amongst some of the other coleus. So Dipped in Wine's one of my favorites. Also, if you want to look for something a little spreading, I don't have a picture of this one, but this one's in one of our containers at the house. Tina did a wonderful job with one of our containers, and this is one that's called Wedding Train. And Wedding Train is very interesting because of its growth habit. It doesn't get very tall like some of the other coleus.
Uh-huh.
It gets around 12 inches in height, give or take. But where you get the bang for your buck with Wedding Train is its spread.
Uh-huh.
It can spread anywhere from 2 to 3 feet. So you just get that nice billowing effect
mm-hmm.
from this particular coleus, and it plays well in containers with other plants.
Nice.
Gets along. Nobody argues with one another. There isn't any name calling. There isn't any rock throwing.
Right.
These guys work harmoniously well together in containers. And Wedding Train, very distinctive too. The foliage, a nice dark color, unique texture, and it's great for some of the more shade-loving type of containers that you do.
Mm-hmm.
Thrives in the heat. So you might want to think about, you know, the coleus. I love blooms, and I say this all the time.
Yeah.
I love blooming plants, but I also like plants that give us that beautiful color with its foliage alone. So coleus, that's the plant we highlighted on this week. Check it out on our Facebook page.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Need to pause for a moment when we come back.
We're going to talk about what's bugging you. I had a customer bring in a couple of these little pesky fellows, and they have a ferocious appetite, bigger than yours, Ernie.
We'll be right back.
From dealing with our friendly woodland creatures to fixing a leaky faucet, here's what's bugging you with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys on B105.
Welcome back. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. It's going to be ugly outside. The heat and humidity might be bugging you, but we have something else that might be bugging you as well.
Caterpillars.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. And this particular caterpillar, he's got a healthy appetite. Kind of like yours, Ernie. Yeah. I don't want him around the cantina here.
No.
Sure.
No.
Customer came in the other day and brought in a sample of a crab apple tree, a couple of the outer portions of the branch, and they were just devoured all the way down, all the foliage, all the leaves, all the way down to the petiole. Hmm. You know, that's the stem that comes off of the branch itself, right, to the leaf. I mean, just devoured. And you couldn't see any activity of anything on it because there wasn't any activity. It was the aftermath. And I thought, there's got to be something going on here. And it was more so, I mean, I know we've had some issues with Japanese beetles, which we're going to touch base on this morning as well. You know, Japanese beetles have a pretty healthy appetite as well.
Right.
But nothing like, you know, caterpillars. And this particular caterpillar, if you grow blueberries, I want you to check your blueberry plants, because this particular caterpillar, you'll find it as well on your blueberries. So check that out. It also, you know, it will affect some trees. And this particular situation I saw the other day was a crab apple. But this particular caterpillar is the yellow-necked caterpillar. It's not the red-necked one, Ronnie. It's the yellow-necked. And they'll go in, you know, it's got a black head with a yellow band around it, around the neck of it. And like yellow stripes that go horizontal down the body. So when they eat on a plant, it's just not one lone guy by himself.
Right.
I mean, they are in clusters. And they just chew it up, and then they keep going and they keep going. And what happens here is all of a sudden your tree or your shrub's pretty well defoliated. But really, no worries. You know, if your tree or your shrub's relatively healthy, it's not going to be the demise of it for the most part. You know, they'll rebound favorably next year.
Mm-hmm.
If, in fact, you want to go after it, a real simple approach, you know, you can use malathion. You know, we were talking about that being in your arsenal, your everyday, you know, what you go to in the cabinet.
Right.
But another biological way to go after it is pick up a product that contains spinosad. Okay.
Okay.
That will work. BT will work. Bacillus thuringiensis. These two products will work well on caterpillars. And you can pick those up at your local garden centers and nurseries. And like Fertilum's bagworm, caterpillar, and tentworm killer, that has BT in it. I take that back. That has spinosad in it. And I apologize. It has spinosad in it, just like Jack's, Captain Jack's spinosad, too. That's a good product. So either one of those will work well.
You mentioned something that I hadn't really noticed infestation of recently, but years ago when we were growing up, we noticed these quite a bit, bagworms. Have those been brought under control, or am I just not noticing them in areas now?
Well, you really have to look for bagworms, you know, and bagworms just don't hang out on evergreens all the time either. And right now, probably, you know, the bagworms are pretty well developed, where some of the products that you want to spray them with is not as effective.
Right.
The best thing that you can do, provided you're within reach, is just pick them off. You know, you got to go after those when they're in a dunce cap stage. And that's when they're
sitting in the corner. They've been in trouble. Well, and easy to get to.
And again, you know, spinosad or BT is great to use, you know, when you start seeing that type of activity. 1 year ahead, I'm on my Japanese maple, you know, so they just don't gravitate towards evergreens. You know, they can get on Japanese maples and other things as well. Uh-huh. So, you know, bagworms, and boy, I tell you, they can strip a blue spruce quickly too, mm-hmm. or any type of spruce, mm-hmm. you know, whatever it is that they're on, they can go to town on it.
Sure.
But these are things you need to look out for when you're mowing your lawn. I say it all the time, just don't have those blinders on and look forward.
Sure.
Look around, you know, pay attention to what's going on in your landscape, that's for sure. But, you know, the yellow-necked caterpillar, gosh, I tell you what, I was telling this gentleman that came into the store the other day, you know, something's really chewing on it. You know, and I even, you know, I got a hold of, I even talked to Joe Smith out at the Boone County Extension. I love it. You know, when I work with the extension staffs over in northern Kentucky, all three counties, Kenton County with Michelle, Sarah over in Boone County, and Joe and the gang out there in Boone County, they do such a great job, and they get back to you in a very timely fashion. And we're so blessed to have those guys on our side of the river. And, you know, Joe got back with me, and he said, yeah, he's been hearing alerts and reports that the yellow-necked caterpillar was, you know, out in full force, and that's exactly what it was. So, and even the gentleman brought in a piece of his tree, and there they were. I was like, dude, you got to keep looking. Yeah. You brought me in the aftermath. You brought me in the chicken bone.
Yeah.
You know, the meat's gone. You brought me in the bone. We need to keep looking.
Sure.
So you got to be diligent about that, but go after it most certainly.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We need to pause for a moment. When we come back,
you know, I let's talk a little bit about some tomatoes. I've been having a lot of people have been coming into the store with some major issues with their tomato plants, and we'll touch base on that and tell you what you may need to know.
That was a big conversation with the boys yesterday afternoon. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Need to pause for a moment. We'll be right back. Welcome back, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Been covering a lot of ground today, talking a little bit about the heat, humidity, the possibility of pop-up showers and thunderstorms today. Temperatures expected to get up to around 92, and then much the same for tomorrow, unfortunately.
Sounds pleasant.
Yep.
I like it.
Great day to go visit your garden center.
Well, you might want to visit and hang outside. I don't know about inside. I tell you, it's been hot in the greenhouse, but that's okay. I can take it. You know, I'm kind of used to it, and I'm sure most other people are too that have garden centers and greenhouses and so forth. But we'd like to take off and hang out at Sunlight Pool for the day.
Yes.
What do you think?
Yeah.
You in? You
take
out?
A little,
do you
take
have tickets?
A dip.
Do you have any tickets to Sunlight?
No.
No? You're the ticket man around here, I heard.
I try to be.
So what were you and the boys talking about in regards to the tomatoes?
As a
yesterday?
Matter of fact,
yeah.
A couple of guys brought up that, you know, I've already got tomatoes. Mm-hmm. And then I heard one or two other guys say, man, my tomatoes are really struggling. Or I've got them. They're just not developing.
It's heat. It's you know, I was just talking with someone the other day. It's like, hey, I have all these blooms on my zucchini and so forth, and my cucumbers and all that good stuff, and tomato plants, and they're just not setting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, be patient. You know, a lot of times temperature has a lot to do with it. And interestingly enough, too, talking about zucchini and cucumbers, you can identify the male and female blooms. So if you're diligent and you're good, you take a little, like, you know, like a little artist paintbrush or maybe a Q-tip.
Right.
And if you look at the blooms on your squash, zucchini, or the your cukes, you'll see that the female has a little, just right at the bottom of that bloom, you should see the fruit, like a little bit of it. It's totally different than the male bloom.
Right.
Open up that male bloom and take that little paintbrush and dab on the pollen and go over to the female and just swirl it around in there.
So you be the pollinator.
You're the pollinator. That's right. You don't have to go get Viagra. You're going to be the pollinator. You know, make it happen. Yeah, the birds like and the bees right there.
Act like a little buzz, bee, bzz.
Right. So you can do that. You know, so, you know, give it a shot. That's all I'm going to say. Give it a shot.
Yeah.
But also at the same time, be patient. So what's going on? What are your guys telling you?
Well, that's they were getting fruit. They were complaining. They were getting fruit. Now the one guy, I guess, do beefsteak tomatoes. Are they the first to bloom and develop and come to fruit?
Not necessarily. No. Typically, one of your first and your earliest varieties that's going to produce is the early girl. Uh-huh. 4th of July is another quick one as well. That's why the other day I was bragging about the celebrity I had picked. Before the 4th of July, that is not common.
Right.
You know, not from my standpoint, you know, it's not often that you see that. It can happen, but a lot of it has to do with, you know, when the plants were started, how large they were when you initially planted them outside and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
The type of soil that you're using, you know, where they're located, what kind of fertilizers you're using, you know, what are your watering habits like? All those things come into play with the success of our vegetables. And, you know, tomato plants in particular, you know, this is the time of year, you know, we're waiting for them to set fruit. If they haven't already set fruit or starting to ripen and so forth, sometimes you'll see, you know, anthracnose or sunken lesions on your fruit. And you know, you get a little aggravated. And it's like, what do I do? What's been going on? A lot of times, too, you know, we need to take, you know, upon ourselves to use fungicides, you know, to keep some of these issues at bay, you know, and like mancozeb, copper fungicides, good to use, Captan, any, you know, like chlorothalonil. These are things that we can use and spray on our vegetable plants to keep them looking good. There's a couple of other things that we can do as we progress through the summer months. I like to mulch the vegetable garden, you know. Now, given if you're tilling up acres and so forth, that's just not going to happen that way.
Yeah.
But if it's something that's manageable that you can take it upon yourself to use, you know, newspapers do a wonderful job, you know, layer those out, dampen them, put down 3 or 4 layers and dampen each one as you place them down, and then put straw on top. You know, what you're doing is you're keeping the soil temperatures favorable, you know, you keep them a little cooler. You're retaining moisture. You're keeping weeds out. When you keep weeds out, you're keeping competition away. Fertilize with low nitrogen fertilizers. You know, there's a lot of things that you can do. I'm not a big avid fan of using the green box and juicing my tomato plants.
Right.
You know, I say it all the time. I don't care if they're taller than the garage. How many tomatoes do you get?
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
It's like when you're in business, you know, when at the end of the day, you know, how much money's in your pocket? You know, if you're just going in every day to work and work and work and you don't have anything at the end of the day, that's the same way with the tomato plants. What are we doing?
Right.
We need to drop back and punt and reevaluate. But, you know, keep an eye on those plants. You know, if you're starting to have some issues or you're starting to experience things like blossom end rot. You know, that's on the bottom of the fruit. It's starting to turn black.
Right.
You know, that's a lack of calcium as the fruit's developing. We say it all the time. So be proactive with your garden. Be proactive with your lawn. Be proactive in the landscape. When you're proactive, it beats being reactive all to heck and back. There's no doubt about it. And speaking of tomatoes, guess what? I posted it on our Facebook.
Chicken butt.
I posted this on the Facebook page. August 12th, Saturday, check it out on our Facebook page. Vicky Tuis is going to have her tomato festival.
That's right.
You know, Ernie.
I know him well.
Last year I was there. Even, I think her name was Ariana and Joseph Simcox was there.
Yeah.
Colonel D will be there. I'm sure he was there last year. A lot of great food. And the best part is seeing all these beautiful heirloom tomatoes and getting to taste them.
Yeah.
It doesn't get any better than that. And it's a nice drive down to the Big Bone area. That's where Thistle Hair Farm is. Mm-hmm. And that's where Vicky Tuis lives. And she takes care of Thistle Hair Farm with her husband, Ed. They do a wonderful job. That tomato festival, we've bragged about it and talked about it many a times. And we'll even address it again. But it's on August 12th. Yeah. And you talk about some goodies right there. Mm-hmm. Take it in. Check it out. And be sure to... get an opportunity. Even those of you who live in Ohio, come on over to our side. Cross the muddy Ohio.
Yeah.
We'll welcome you. And, you know, you don't have to kick your shoes off either.
Yeah.
Right?
Right. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Need to pause for a moment when we come back.
Let's take it north of here to Columbus. I was at the Cultivate 17 Expo, mm-hmm. and let's kind of hone in on some of the favorites that were up there. New plant introductions for 2018.
Sounds great. We'll be right back. Welcome back. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And Tony, we have a listener on the line. Kyle from White Oak has a weed issue in the mulch. Can always be frustrating, can't it, Kyle?
Hey, how you guys doing this morning?
All right, good. How are you?
Doing very well. Hey, I know you guys are getting ready to talk about a different topic. I just had a real quick question.
Sure, go ahead.
These daggone weeds in my mulch bed. I probably went out there. I know you guys talk about being preactive versus retroactive. I guess I fall behind eight ball a little bit. The problem is I can't seem to find a decent weed killer that's not going to destroy my plant. I didn't know if you guys had a one that you would recommend.
Well, that can be a problem. And one of the things is whatever you're trying to get rid of and whatever it is that you're using, you certainly don't want any drift or overspray to get on what we call desirables in the landscape
Correct.
Beds. What is it that's in the landscape beds that you need to be aware of? Are they shrubs? Are they perennials? Are they annuals? What are we?
Just all shrubs.
Okay.
I probably have maybe 10 or 15 of them, and then I have a Japanese maple
okay.
On the far end. Besides that, just a couple boxwoods. This is obviously not my forte, so I don't know the exact name of some of these plants or some of these shrubs, but it's all shrubs. I don't have any plants in.
Okay.
I'm having a terrible time with these weeds, it's kind of a pain in the butt, but I guess that's life.
This is how I would approach it. Just the other day, I know we've been having some intermittent showers throughout the tri-state, but I've always found there's a couple of things we're going to talk about right here. One is the weeds that are closest to your plants, I want you to manually pull.
Okay.
Okay. And like the other day when we had the rain, a lot of times after we get a decent rain and you go out and pull weeds, it's a little easier than it is when it's bone dry.
Sure.
So after we get a decent rain or if it's easy to pull weeds, I want you to pull those physically that are closest to your boxwoods, your Japanese maple, or whatever else that's there.
Okay.
Then what I want you to do, you're over there close to White Oak Garden Center.
Mm-hmm. Correct. I usually go to Schwab's, but White Oak.
Oh, yeah, Schwab's too. Yeah, no. See Mitzi over there, Schwab's as well. Any of those, as long as you're supporting locals, that's what this show's all about.
Sure.
Pick up either Killzall or Roundup and spray what's in your landscape beds. Now, here's something that you can do to keep overspray from getting on your desirables. Try and get like a piece of cardboard that might be 2 or 3, you know, like 2 feet by 2 feet or 2 feet by 3.
Okay.
And just kind of put it to the side or next to the shrub you don't want to get any drift or overspray on.
Okay.
And spray what's there after you've pulled what's close, you know, what's closest to those plants.
Now when you're talking, I do have some weeds that are coming up into the shrubs. Obviously, I would pull those manually. I mean, what type of area are we talking as far as when you're saying closed?
Well, I would, however far out, however wide the shrub is or the tree, you know, try to go, you know, you don't want to get any overspray on it because
sure.
you will have damage. You know, get underneath there and pull as best you can. And once you get rid of everything, what you have to turn around and do right away is put down Dimension. And that's a pre-emergent. Get that down and then start using it on a regular basis, like 2 or 3 times a year. And you won't have any weed issues in your landscape. I guarantee you.
Dimension.
It's over there at Schwab's. You can get it at Schwab's. It's ask Mitzi or Danny. Ask those two. Tell them you want Dimension, which is a high yield product. It's called High Yield Turf and Ornamental Weed and Grass Stopper. And what you'll do, you'll spread that out. You'll sprinkle it out on top of the mulch. Once you get rid of everything, that's what you got to do next.
Okay. Now, will that affect my desirable? I mean, should I do the same process that I'm doing with the weed killer that's totally fine for the plants?
Yeah, it won't harm the plants that are there at all. It just keeps weed seed that blows in from germinating.
Okay.
All right.
Very good. Thank you, guys.
Follow up with us. Let us know how it comes along. Give us a before and after photo. Is it really bad?
I mean, I've gotten out there probably two or three times since probably maybe early June, and pulled them. So it just, I guess with this rain that it seems like they just come back the next day.
They love this kind of weather. You know, there isn't any competition in that bed, and you get a little bit of moisture, a little bit of heat, and it's like game on. Right. Good luck to you.
My front yard's looking great with the free step. I've been doing that probably for 2-3 years now. My front yard looks great.
Awesome.
And then all of a sudden it just gets my mulch bed and it's just a mess.
Yeah. Well, once you get this cleaned up, get into the habit of using Dimension, and your landscape beds will look just as good as the lawn.
Sounds good. I appreciate it.
All right. You're welcome. Take care.
Mm-hmm. 749-B105 and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Well, yeah, I'm glad you got a chance to get in there because that can be just so frustrating.
Oh, absolutely.
It's looking good for a moment and then poof.
You know, I pulled some weeds in my vegetable garden yesterday, but I don't put any type of pre-emergent in the vegetable garden, nor do I encourage anybody to do that because I want to keep it as clean as possible. You know, when I'm consuming what I'm growing, we don't need that.
Right.
You know, we get enough of it as it is. We don't know what we're eating, where it comes from. And I'm going to leave it as that. That's a whole nother topic in itself. But a great call right there, a great point that, you know, keeping those landscape beds looking, you know, at their best, it's going to take some initial work from him in the beginning.
Right.
But once he gets into the flow of it, it's easy. You know, I keep my garden weeded often, and I just went down and I pulled 2 or 3, 4 things.
Right.
It's easier to do that than it is to spend an hour on it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So that's being proactive. Stay with it. Stay with it.
Yeah. The other thing that a lot of people had talked about the boys yesterday afternoon was the abundance of zucchini. Do you grow some zucchini?
I did not this year. Yeah. I have. Mm-hmm. But so it sounds like they're doing well.
Apparently
things are all happy.
Well.
Yeah, there you go. And nothing better when you just go down to the garden. And, you know, if you're pulling a tomato or some cherry tomatoes, the kids love cherry tomatoes.
Mm-hmm.
Cukes. Last year I didn't grow cukes this year. I switch it up a little bit, you know. And I didn't grow cucumbers this year, but last year I had a bumper crop in abundance. We couldn't keep up with them.
Mm-hmm.
That's how well they performed. So, you know, I mix it up a little bit. This year I did a few more herbs than anything else. We like to cook. So just getting down into the garden, you know, snipping basil or, you know, rosemary, thyme or oregano, chives. Mm-hmm. Now I'm getting hungry. So that's what it's about, being able to, you know, reap what, you know, harvest what you reap.
Right.
And that's so rewarding.
749-B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And Tony, we have Dave on the line from Hayesville. Got a question. He's got a brown spot or brown spots on his dogwood. Hi, Dave. How old is the tree?
This is its second season.
Its second season.
And it's a dwarf variegated red sweet dogwood.
Okay. Yeah, it's... I will tell you this, it's a beautiful specimen. What is the variety? Do you know exactly the variety?
No, I don't. Couldn't tell you.
Did you say variegated?
That's correct.
Yeah. What happens is, you know, the heat and humidity, all of a sudden, it's not going to kill the plant by any means. Don't worry about it. Don't do anything heroic. You know, don't overwater it. A lot of times, you know, is it in full sun too?
Just the afternoon. It happened last year. It was the first year we actually planted the little bush. And towards the end of the season, it got brown spot on. The leaves just dried up and fell off.
Yeah, they're notorious for that. They will certainly do that. And it's really environmental. It's weather related. I'm assuming it might be ivory halo is the name of it. It's a variegated variety.
I don't know. And
but typically, you know, I will tell you this, as much as I love the red twig dogwood and even the yellow twig dogwood, you can be plagued with some of those kind of foliage issues. What you can do, and as we were talking with the last caller, this is what you can do from the standpoint of being proactive, is before we get into the rainy season, before it gets really hot and so forth, and all those things combined wreak havoc on our shrubs, is to start spraying with some fungicides. For example, like mancozeb, chlorothalonil. You can find these at your local garden centers. They'll carry these types of fungicides, copper fungicide. And the beauty of that is that if you're being proactive and spraying your plants periodically, it may not be the total cure, but I will assure you of this, you will see less of an impact if you did nothing at all.
Okay, not a good suggestion.
And also, your irrigation habits, do not overhead water if you can keep from it. If you're watering at night, you know, always stay down low next to the soil surface. Make sure you get plenty of air movement around your shrubs. Your, you know, especially the dogwoods, they can look pretty gnarly, but typically it's not going to be the demise of it.
Okay. I also have another question. For a certain area that only gets sun between 2 o'clock to maybe 8 o'clock at night. Are there any varieties that we're trying to bring some color into a corner?
Yeah.
And we're having a little hard time finding something that doesn't grow past the window ledge, you know, the bottom of the window ledge.
And what kind of height are we looking at with that that window ledge there to the surface of the soil?
So it's been about 32 inches.
Okay, okay. You know, what comes to thought right away are some of the lower growing paniculata hydrangea varieties.
Okay.
Just to throw a couple your way, one in particular that I think would be well suited there because of the mere fact you're going from 2 to about 8, so it looks like you're getting mostly afternoon sun, as you described, will be enough light to give you great bloom production, is one called Bobo. It'll get about 2.5 feet in height and about the same spread. So therefore, it's not going to impede and get up above the window. That would be a good choice right there. Something else that's of interest, too, when I was up at the Cultivate short course, I noticed, too, there's some new butterfly bushes out there, Buddleias, and they're in the Puckster series. And you'll hear us often talk about the dwarf varieties of butterfly bushes, and we talk about the Lo and Behold series. I've not grown these or know a whole lot about it, but I think it's very promising because you're getting this dwarf butterfly bush with color with the larger blooms that we're accustomed to seeing, like we do with our larger growing Buddleias butterfly bushes. So you might look for those down the road. They're going to be new for 2018. And when I talk about some of these newer varieties, unfortunately, it's all about production. And we may see some of these items. We may not for a season or two. But I'm just throwing that out there. But there is, you know, the Lo and Behold butterfly Buddleia series that you could think about planting there. Another hydrangea that I like that you can prune back annually, late winter, early spring, is one called Little Quickfire. As it opens up, it's a creamy white, kind of a whitish color that will gradually turn to a rose color as we progress throughout the summer months. You can keep those within check. They'll probably get more around the 3-foot range, give or take. That would be an idea. You know, Weigelia might be another option for you, too. You know, one called Spilled Wine, kind of low-growing and spreading. Dark foliage, very attractive. That might be an option as well. So you have a number of things there to choose from.
All right, great. I never thought about that last one. That's a good suggestion.
Yeah.
All right, well, I will pick up some.
Yeah. Follow up with us. You know, maybe an evergreen that gives you a little bit of color is one called Fire Chief. I think you'll have enough sun there that gives you that yellow tinge that it has with the red tip.
Yeah, actually, we have those. Those are pretty nice.
Yeah, I like Fire Chief. So, you know, look for those kind of things, too.
All right, great. I do appreciate the information,
sure.
Gentlemen.
All right. Well, hang in there with your red twig dogwood. You know what? You can. They're beautiful in the winter. That's really what it's about. When you get a snowfall and you have that red twig kind of accent coming up out of the snow itself, they're very attractive. Cut some of those. Use them for winter kind of green containers. Use them as decorations.
Yeah, could do that.
Nice. All right.
You're full of good information.
Try it. Maybe too much sometimes. Yeah, I don't know. And I forget a lot as well. So thank you.
Happy you said information.
Have a good weekend.
You too. 749-B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Need to pause for a moment when we come back.
We're still going to talk about some new introductions. As I just stated, the new dwarf butterfly bushes that are coming out, we're going to stay on that same note, and we're going to talk about some things you might want to look for at your local garden centers and nurseries in 2018.
We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And Tony, a flurry of activity from the phone lines. We have Brenda on the line from St. Leon. Got a question for you. She wants to know, when's the best time to buy and to plant a tree? Hi, Brenda. Thanks for the call.
Hi. How are you?
Wonderful. And you?
Good.
So we understand your daughter just bought a house?
Yes, okay. She did. And we're not sure when the best time is to buy and plant a tree. She's all gung-ho about going and getting one today. And I said, I don't know.
No, it's, you know, although it's warm, don't let that discourage you. And typically when you buy a tree, you get a one-year warranty with it anyway.
Uh-huh.
So, and congratulations, and pass that on to your daughter for me.
I will, thank you.
The one thing I really want you, before you make this purchase, is assess the area, the amount of light that you get.
Yep. Where did she purchase the house?
She bought a house off of Colerain.
Okay.
And she wants to actually put a new tree out in the front yard.
Okay.
All right. Now, I know this sounds tedious, but does it get morning sun, or is she wanting
all
to put it
day.
In all day sun?
I mean, this is all day sun.
Okay, so she's looking for a little relief from
maybe,
the sun.
Maybe a shade tree, perhaps.
Yeah. Is there like a red maple that goes into a shade tree? That's what she's looking
for. Oh, yeah.
For.
I love maples, you know. You can never have too many maples or any type of tree, you know. I love trees. There's a number of things that you can do, you know. Just make sure you have ample room to allow whatever particular tree that you pick up grow.
Uh-huh.
And as far as red maples are concerned, Autumn Blaze is one of the quicker growing varieties. And you have a really good source over close to where you are. You know, you can go to Schwab Nursery. You can go over to White Oak Nursery as well. And, you know, just talk to one of the staff members, you know, and get a little bit of insight and information on some of the various types of maples that are out there and available. But any of the red maples, you know, I love that red color that you get. Red Sunset's another good one. Something a little bit narrower, a little bit more of a pyramidal shape is Red Point. That's another good maple.
Okay.
I can just go on about maples. If you're looking for something not as tall, I love the paper bark maple.
Okay.
So you know, starting clean and with a new slate like that and just redoing some things or adding to the landscape what's already there, it's always a fun thing to do. And don't be discouraged by the heat that we're having right now.
Yeah, that's what I was worried about.
No, typically, most things that you will find in a container are suitable. And what I want you to do first and foremost, you know, hopefully you make that purchase today. You find what you're looking for and what's most suitable is when you plant it. What's really important is prepping the soil, you know, getting that site ready. And keep this in mind. Most of the times you will find at local nurseries and garden centers that containerized trees will typically, they might come in a 5-gallon container, a 7-gallon container, a 10-gallon, 15-gallon, up to 25.
Okay.
The larger the container, the larger the tree typically. But what's most important when you prep the soil and dig your hole, I want you to dig that hole twice the width of the pot, the root ball, not deep. Wide. Most of your growth is horizontal. Most trees don't have a taproot and go straight down, so they don't need to be deep.
Okay.
Okay. That soil that you dig out of that hole, put it off to the side, and I want you to look at that, what you dig out and put off to the side, and by volume say, hey, I'm going to add about 25 to 30% compost, manure, peat moss, pine fines to that existing soil, mix it evenly, and that's what you're going to fill back in with and plant.
Okay.
Don't discard it. A lot of people will do that, but ultimately you want to use the soil that you're digging up and where that plant's going to reside and what it's going to grow in.
Okay, because I know where she's wanting to plant it at. They had had a shrub.
Mm-hmm.
And when she moved in, we pulled it out, and I was kind of worried about, you know, that ground being used right away. And
so no, as long as you get all the root, you'll be fine.
Okay.
And never bury the tree too deep. I do not want you to take soil up over the trunk, nor when you mulch it. I don't want you to put mulch or take mulch up over the trunk, okay?
Okay.
You can elevate. I mean, like if the root ball is, say, 16 inches tall, I mean, you can dig your hole maybe to 13 or 14 inches and then build soil up to it and mound it a little bit like that, or you can just plant it right even with the ground as it sits. But
well,
never take soil up over the trunk. Now, oh, one last tip. When you're over there at either Schwab or at White Oak, I want you to pick up one of two items. I want you to pick up either Fertilume's root stimulator. It's in a liquid form. Or I want you to look for Aspomus Biotone. I want you to use one of those two products when you plant, okay? With the root stimulator from Fertilume, you'll mix that up and water that in after you plant your tree. With the Biotone, you'll mix that with the soil, then fill back in around the hole. Do not use any high nitrogen fertilizers, and you'll get off to a good start.
All right. You said it was called Bioterm?
Biotone, T-O-N-E.
Okay.
Or look for Fertilume's root stimulator.
All right.
Either
well,
one of those
guys.
Two. You're welcome, and have fun. You'll find a tree today.
Yeah, it's happy tree hunting.
There you go.
There you
all
are.
Right.
Thanks, guys.
You're
have
welcome.
A good day.
Bye-bye. 749-B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. When we come back, we are going to touch base on.
I'm afraid to say, but it's okay.
All right. Let's do it. Then don't.
I won't.
When we come back, we're going to talk about what Tony's wanted to talk about.
More gardening, more plants, and all that good stuff. How's that?
We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And heat, humidity going to be ruling the day again. And also a chance of a pop-up shower, 40% chance of that happening sometime throughout the course of the day. 90s today, 90s tomorrow, and then the 80s on Monday when everybody comes back to work. We have Jerry on the line from Northern Kentucky. Got a rosebush question.
Morning, Jerry.
Morning, Jerry.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
All right,
good.
How are you?
Staying cool.
Doing our best.
I got a question about my wife's roses. She wants to know.
Okay.
Last year, they got, like, chewed up really bad.
Mm-hmm.
Put that root stimulator stuff on them, whatever it is.
The drench or
Yeah, the drench.
Yeah.
And this year, they're doing the same thing. And also notice my hostas are getting the same way. They're getting all, like, brown and chewed up.
Hmm.
Well, with the hostas, let's start there. And, yeah, we've had some decent moisture, and you know, in addition to what you've been doing as far as watering is concerned around the house. You know, typically what's plaguing hostas, if deer aren't eating them, it's usually the snails and slugs. So there are some products that you can purchase that you'll sprinkle underneath the hosta itself around the base of it.
They're like the pellets?
Yeah, they're like a pellet, and they do a phenomenal job. They really do. And typically, if you're looking at the hosta leaf, you're like scratching your head and you're saying, you know, I don't see anything on it or underneath it during the daytime. But really, everybody comes out late. They're going to the party. They're going to the bar late. You know, after dusk, you know, if you wait a little while and go out there with the flashlight, you will see little gray snails, slugs going up the trunk, you know, or up the stems of the hosta. And they all hang out and party on their on the underneath side of the leaves. They love the foliage. There's no doubt about it. You can also, another little tip, if you want to make sure if, in fact, you're having, you know, like slug issues or, you know, snail issues, is to take like a little, you know, like a, just for example, like a little lid off of a mayonnaise jar or an old jar, a glass jar, mm-hmm. put some beer in it. And they love beer. They'll drown in it, so they'll go towards it. So that's a telltale sign. That's what you're having problems with.
Well, I noticed yesterday also because we had the grandkids down because they was all down for like a little pool party and stuff.
Uh huh.
And they were finding all these little yellow and black snails in the flower beds.
Yeah, and I don't know what variety that would be. Were they in shells or were they just?
They were in shells.
Yeah, but it's usually not the one that you'll see on your hostas. They're usually gray. They're about a quarter of an inch in length, if that. And right. Not that you wouldn't see some. Remember those old nasty, gnarly ones you would see in that big old slimy trail about 8 feet would be behind them?
Yeah, the one.
Kind of like Ernie, you know, eating popcorn and getting it all over the carpet at the cinema. So, yeah, but that's where I would start with the hosta. You know, now going back to the rose bush, I guess if you're using the drench, it should be plenty effective for you. Is the drench relatively new? Is it in good shape? Did you shake it well? You know, a lot of times.
We used it last year.
Okay.
Came back healthy as could be this year.
Okay.
And all of a sudden, I just noticed the leaves are all like getting real brownish.
Well, that might have something to do with, you know, watering or, you know, and I want to ask you as well, have you been fertilizing too? Don't use high nitrogen fertilizers and don't spray fertilizers on the foliage and don't get the foliage wet during the daytime and don't water overhead irrigate at night. Make sure there's plenty of air movement around those rose bushes. Now, I will tell you this. That some roses are more resistant. Yeah, well, you know, that should be pretty decent. And the only thing that I can speculate, Jerry, if you're seeing a lot of holes in the leaves, you know, that might be some Japanese beetle activity as well versus rose slug. And it doesn't mean that the product's not working effectively because think about it like this. You're a Japanese beetle, and that activity should be, you know, coming to a halt here if it hasn't already. But if you're a Japanese beetle and you fly into somebody's yard and you start feasting on a shrub, that doesn't mean when you take a bite of that shrub and it has the imidacloprid in it, the systemic drench product, that once it eats that piece of the leaf and digests it and flies down the street, that it doesn't die elsewhere. And then another one flies in. So you don't get to see that type of activity. It's most effective, and you see it when it works best, when you have things that hang out on it, like the rose slug larva. You know, they don't leave it until they turn into adults. And then, they, you know, it's a sawfly, and it flies away. But for the most part, you know, it's hard to say. Other than the fact, if you mixed it properly and it hadn't been out in the shed and had frozen during the winter months, you still should be fine, provided you use 3 ounces to a gallon of water per foot high to plant.
Okay.
And, you know, sometimes they get ugly, cut them back. Because as we start going towards the tail end of summer, going into the fall, you'll see your rose bushes pick back up and start really coming on because they like cooler temperatures. They perform better.
Right.
And those cooler
tips. Back about 6 inches every year.
Yeah, six, you know, around 10 inches is good. Don't go down too deep. Because sometimes, you know, I don't know if you have older ones that are grafted or if they're still on their own root. All right?
Right.
Jerry, always good to hear from you. Stay cool, brother.
You too.
All right. Bye.
749-B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And you mentioned Japanese beetles, Tony. We have Vicki on the line from Hamilton. She wants to know if it's worth treating her trees for Japanese beetles. Hi, Vicki. How bad is it?
Hey, good morning. It's pretty bad out here.
Yeah?
Yeah, it's, I read in the Beagle, the Buckeye Yard and Garden Line, that there's been above normal, you know, Japanese beetle activity. And I've seen it in the last couple of years, and it's sporadic. It's not everywhere. I don't see them in my neighborhood, but that doesn't mean others like yourself aren't having some issues with them this season. you know, the trees that we're talking about that they're chewing on, older, established, younger, give me an idea.
Now we're talking about the emerald ash bug, correct?
No, I'm talking about the Japanese beetle. Are you talking about the emerald ash borer?
Yes.
Oh.
That's a different creature altogether.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm talking about our big ash trees that we're losing tons and probably
every... Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I was...
No, I'm sorry about that.
Okay. Have you had them treated?
We had, unfortunately, about 12 huge trees we had to have taken down, and then we have five big ones, semi-big ones, up by the road.
Mm-hmm.
We had them treated 2 years ago, and it's supposed to be done every 2 years.
Yeah.
I mean, you get into a lot of money. They're $100 a tree.
Well, let me back up here and put it to you like this.
Okay.
How tall are those trees? Quite large?
Oh yeah, they're not as big as the ones we had taken down, but they're large.
Okay. Well, let's look at it like this. $100 for a 2 year treatment, right?
Right.
Let's say you treat them for 10 years.
No, a lot of
money. Well, that's $500. But what did it cost you for you to take those trees down?
Believe it or not, we had probably these trees taken down for right around $700, which was
okay.
A big deal.
So therefore, you know, you've recouped your money there. In addition to, if those trees are shading your home, what it would cost you can never get a tree to replace at that size for little money.
Okay.
And time is of the essence. I think, personally, this is my 2 cents worth, is that they're worth treating if they're healthy. And secondly, what it would cost for you to remove that, grind out a stump, and get another tree in there that's certainly not going to be at that size in regards to what you had just removed or taken out, to me, that's worth it. Now, that's your call, but... other than that, that's really your only recourse.
Okay, but have you heard anything about, I mean, like, I guess the arborist told us 2 years ago that they might start looking, they're going to look worse before they look better. So we have one of the five, actually two of the five that are looking pretty bad right now. And my husband's like, he doesn't want to put any more money into
right.
them. I have a friend in Liberty that has had hers treated like over the course of 4 to 5 years, and her tree is starting to come back really good now.
You will see some comeback. There's no doubt about it. And it really depends upon the overall health of that tree to begin with.
Okay.
You know, in conjunction with how much damage has taken place underneath, you know, the bark of that tree. You know, what's affected is the phloem, you know, with emerald ash borer. And it disrupts everything that goes up into that tree, water, nutrients, you name it.
Okay.
So, now, get a couple of opinions.
Okay.
And when you talk to a certified arborist, somebody who's ISA certified, okay, you know, just plainly, just state it like this. If this is your mom's tree or your tree, you know, don't keep me coming. You know, can it stay or does it really need to go?
Okay.
You know, and I don't mean this bad about chiropractors, you know, sometimes these people will keep you coming, and they'll keep you on the line.
Absolutely.
And that's not right. And I'm not saying everybody is like that either. You know, get a couple of opinions and then make an assessment based on what information you're given and determine what it is that you want to do. In my opinion, if they're too far gone, and don't even waste your time and money.
Okay.
Take care of it just as you stated that you've already done with some of the other trees, and plant something else in its place.
Okay.
And follow up with me. You know, Dave Stang, Davey Tree, Madison Tree, all these guys, just call around, Tim Back, call around and you know, get a couple of opinions. And, you know, follow up with me, please. I like to hear, you know, how things are being approached and looked at today, given that we've been confronted with this issue with EAB for some time.
Yeah, and you know, one more thing, we do have an older one, one of the ones that's still surviving,
mm-hmm.
and we treated this one probably 10 years ago. We got the gallon of this stuff and poured it around the base on the ground.
Right,
now this tree, we did not cut it down. It is, it's trying to survive. So
yeah.
We treated it again last year, and we're going to do it again this year. I mean, we got a lot of dead branches, but there's a lot of new growth trying to come on it.
Interesting. You know, as long as it's up top, you know, a lot of times you'll see growth coming out at the base or the sides of the tree, which is not really what you want to look for.
Okay.
And interesting what you said, because I had a conversation, it was a couple of years ago, maybe a year and a half ago, with Jeff Webler from over at White Oak.
Okay.
And he has an ash tree, and he told me he's treating it himself, and it's really the diameter of it above breast height. You know, there's certain specs that people follow in the arborist world. You know, should you treat it yourself, or if it's over a certain diameter, you need to have it injected.
Okay.
He's not done that. He told me his tree looks so well, you know, so good. Now, I haven't talked to him about it recently, but I would be interested to know and talk with Jeff to see how that tree is still doing. But he took it upon himself to just treat it to see what the outcome would be.
He's at White Oak.
Uh-huh.
I might give him a call.
Give Jeff a call and ask him. Just tell him you talked to me, that I had that conversation with him about a year and a half ago. And I thought it was interesting, and he was seeing favorable results.
Okay.
So take it from there. Follow up with me, will you, please?
Well, you guys are the best. Thank you.
Thank you. Have a good weekend. Bye.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We need to pause for a moment. When we come back,
more gardening.
More gardening. We'll be right back. The house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And Tony, we did have a call about this a little bit last week. And this is this Terrell? Are you there?
Terrell?
Yeah. You have something that's digging up your plants, but they're not eating them. You're in Bridgetown, is that right?
Correct.
Okay. So what kind of issues are you having?
Well, every morning I have to replant.
Carol, are these newly planted type of items in a container? Are they in your a perennial bed, landscape bed of any sort? What are we?
They are in a landscape bed, and it's happening nearly every night.
Perennials?
Yeah. No, they are annual.
Okay.
And they're rather small, quart size.
Okay. Did you?
We do live in an area where there's lots of woods.
Mm-hmm. Were they recently planted, or they've been planted for a while?
No, actually, they were fine for 2 months, and it started happening maybe a month ago.
Interesting. My experience with this has been usually it's raccoon activity. Now,
okay.
I can't swear by that, or maybe groundhog, okay?
Possibly, yes.
I know that... I'm sorry, go ahead.
What should I do about them?
Well, what I would do to... kind of, how do I want to say this, to either prove that it is or isn't, is I would buy a trap, a have-a-heart trap, or borrow one, or, you know, a raccoon trap.
We have tried that, and nothing is in the trap, but the bait's gone.
The bait is gone. Like,
yeah.
It was moved from the where they would have to walk over the mechanism that would trigger the doors to shut?
Yeah.
Okay. A little fix for that, too. Do you still have these traps?
Yeah.
Okay. Just take a piece of screen and wrap around that end to where they can't reach through the trap with their paws and move it. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And therefore, if they really want the food, they're going to go inside.
Okay.
So do that first. I had that problem once before. So, you know, they were outsmarting me. And I'm glad. That's what I went to college for, was just determined I was going to put some wire around it. But anyway, I would put like a can of tuna out there. I always had good luck with tuna.
Okay.
And once you catch these guys, one or two, see if that activity stops. Because I had the same problem with some of my perennials.
Yes.
And when I caught the raccoon, and originally I thought it was a groundhog, but when I caught a raccoon and I took him out to the SPCA, they put him away, I never had the problem thereafter. So it was one that was causing me all the grief and problem, and that was my experience. Now, sometimes, too, I don't know if deer are trying to feed on something and are tugging it hard enough to pull up, but typically they would eat it.
Exactly. That's why I think it's probably not deer.
Right. So typically raccoons they're foraging for things underneath in that root structure, that system, be it grubs or whatever. They love grubs. You know, it just depends. And or a groundhog. And see if that doesn't help. But put some wire around your trap and use those little strip ties. you know what I'm talking about, you can buy?
Yes.
And that will secure it to your cage, and that will prevent them from reaching in with their paws and moving the food forward or backwards or over to the side, and they just eat it from the outside.
Okay, good suggestion. See, we will give it a try.
Yeah, you know, follow up with this, will you please?
Will do.
All right. Good luck to you. Happy Thanks. Hunting.
Thank you.
749-B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Tony, we have Marissa on the line from Blue Ash. She's got a question for you. Why won't her hydrangea plants bloom this year?
Mm.
Do you have a lot of them, Marissa?
No, I just have one that I got as a gift when I moved into my house about 4 years ago. Uh-huh. It bloomed every year except this year.
Okay. Do you know the variety? Can you give me an idea maybe what the blooms look like when it did bloom?
So originally they were purple.
Okay.
Like a bluish purple.
Okay.
And they were big bushels. Probably larger than I've seen previously.
Okay, so they were like a nice size bloom head on it, like a macrophylla. Do you know the variety by chance?
I don't.
Okay. So it sounds like it's one of the varieties, like a macrophylla, that either it's going to be pink or blue or purplish, depending upon the pH level, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about where it is. How long has it been in its place? Did you plant it, or was it there when you moved in?
No, I planted it about 4 years ago. I got it as a gift from my husband.
Okay. And how much sun exposure is it receiving?
It's partially sun, so very little, like a late afternoon sun, as it told me to do.
Okay. Give me an idea, like an hour, 2 hours maybe?
Probably an hour, maybe two most.
I think it might or it would appreciate a little more. Now, I have to also ask you, if it was blooming the first couple of seasons, I mean, when you first bought it and it was in bloom, was each subsequent year getting less and less?
Yeah.
Okay, it's a light problem, it sounds like to me, the amount of sun. Although we often say or we're told that macrophylla hydrangeas are shade-loving, they appreciate a little bit of shade, but they also need some sun to develop those bloom buds. What's best suited for that particular type of hydrangea is an environment or a condition where it is growing, where it gets morning sun up to maybe 1 or 2 o'clock, and then maybe some afternoon shade, a little reprieve in the hotter part of the afternoon. Maybe we might need to relocate it. If you're not getting that much sun, I can almost bet that it's the problem here. The other thing that you can try is using a fertilizer that's a little higher in the middle number. Now, is that another question?
Oh, no. I thought that was a statement. I thought just using maybe a better fertilizer?
Well, something with a higher middle number. But is the foliage really nice and green and lush on it?
Yeah. It's beautiful.
Yeah, you're just not getting enough sun, in my opinion. Some of the trees around you, have they grown and gotten larger since you've planted it initially 4 years ago?
So we don't have any trees.
Okay, all right. I would seriously think about relocating it late in the season and see if that doesn't help. I know you may not want to do that, but I think you're going to have to. And did you prune it this year?
Yes.
When did you prune it? Late winter, early spring?
Early spring. So I did all my planting and pruning and stuff right around Mother's Day.
Yeah, you just pruned out the dead or what didn't make it through the winter?
Yes.
Okay. You should be seeing some bloom. You really should, because it's one of the newer varieties, I'm sure. One of the endless summer varieties, perhaps, or one of the re-blooming varieties, which blooms on old wood and new wood. I mean, this year's growth and last year's. And if you're getting lush foliage, that tells me that it's liking where it is, but just not enough sunlight to give you the bloom production. So you need to make a decision. Unfortunately, it may need to be relocated and see what happens next season.
Okay.
Okay. Follow up with us. Thank you.
Thank Thank you.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Tony, we have time for one more caller. No, we're going to go to the break. I'm sorry. When we come back, we have Candy on the line from Westchester looking for a plant that will last year-round. We'll be right back. Welcome back. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Tony, we have Candy on the line. Thanks for hanging on, Candy. What kind of plants are you looking for?
Well, I'd like to get something that's an evergreen, maybe a dwarf boxwood or something like that that I can put in these containers.
Okay.
Oh, that's a perfect choice. You know, it would be one of the choices if you're looking for an evergreen to put into a container. Will they be up close to the house, somewhat protected during the winter months?
Yes, yeah, they'll be on either side of the garage, and we do have a rather large overhang on our house.
Perfect. First and foremost, you know, what I want you to be aware of is once we're above ground in a container, anything's possible. So with that said, you know, we're playing Russian roulette, but the boxwood would be an excellent choice. It would be one of my first choices. One in particular, and I don't know if you kind of like this look. I love the conical shape of the a particular boxwood called Green Mountain.
Oh, yeah?
And as it grows, and each year as it flushes out with new growth, let that new growth harden off a little bit. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you can keep it in like a conical tree form type of shape. Very attractive.
Okay.
Or you can use one of the other varieties that you can shape into a ball, like green velvet, something of that nature. That would be a great choice. The larger the container, the better, because there's more room for that root system and less risk of damage during the cold months.
Okay.
Also, keep them happy. You know, fertilize them occasionally with Hollytone, you know, twice a year.
Okay.
If that pod is large enough, you may lightly mulch them. You know, okay. Again, don't plant them too deep. Don't take soil up over the trunk of the boxwoods, nor mulch.
Okay.
Other than that, you know, and keep an eye on any insect activity, but they would make for a wonderful plant to winter over or be year-round in a container. The other choices are, maybe not necessary for you, but other people, would be arborvitae, like emerald greens. You know, they're narrow, they're upright. Recently, I did some junipers that I just finally removed from some pots at the garden center, but they were there for about 4 years. Started getting a little ratty looking.
Yeah.
But anyway, any one of those will suit you just fine, and you should be okay.
Okay. Can I ask one more question?
We got about 30 seconds.
Okay. My creeping phlox are not blooming. Why?
Oh, son? Tell me a little bit. You get enough sun on them?
They get about 4 hours of sun a day.
Morning or afternoon?
Morning. Morning up till about 1 o'clock in the day.
They should. You know what? Save that question and follow up with this.
Okay.
It should be enough, but I don't know. Anyway, we gotta conclude here, but we'll pick up on that on the next show.
Okay, I appreciate it. I really appreciate you guys.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
You
too. Bye. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We will be back and talk to you next week.